Hello, this is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, discussions on writing and the writing life. Jack Heffron is a creative nonfiction and fiction author who, during his career, has served as editorial director for a number of book imprints, including Writer's Digest Books, Story Press, Emmis Books, and Clarissy Press. In his publishing career, he played a role as editor, writer, or ghostwriter in the publication of more than 1,000 books. He teaches journalism at the University of Cincinnati and writes regularly for Cincinnati Magazine. His short stories have appeared in literary magazines such as North American Review and Tri-Quarterly, and his nonfiction has appeared in many publications, including the Oxford American. His nonfiction has won a number of awards and been listed in Best American Travel Writing. Jack has been on the faculty of the yearly Writing at Real Writers Conference for 17 years and has spoken at many writers' conferences across the country. His books include The Local Boys, Hometown Players for the Cincinnati Reds, co-authored with his brother, Joe Heffron, The Writer's Idea Workshop, How to Make Your Good Ideas Great, and The Writer's Idea Book, How to Develop Great Ideas for Fiction, Nonfiction, Poetry, and Screenplays. He is also the editor of 2 volumes of The Best Writing on Writing, as well as co-author of several more books on writing. In his spare time, Jack plays piano. Jack, I read your bio, and since I know you, I also know how much you write on behalf of others, edit and do your own fiction writing, as well as work on books about American popular culture and hold down a busy day job. So my question is, to begin with, do you sleep?
Oh, every once in a while I let myself, but
What, 15 minutes a night?
Sure, yeah. Try to grab a little something here or there.
I
do stay pretty busy. Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, the good thing about writing, though, is that you don't have to do it 10 hours a day. You'd be surprised if you can steal a half hour here, a half hour there, but do it regularly. Pages kind of build up. Things get done.
How do you fold all of these activities of writing into a writing life where you're producing writing, I guess, a half hour at a time?
Yeah, pretty much. And that's the way I've done it for years. I mean, I've always had kind of 9-to-5 sort of job. Fortunately, I'm an early riser. So I just kind of used mornings, which is actually when I tend to be most creative anyway, to do it. Get up, get a cup of coffee, and then if you can knock out an hour, the world is still quiet. A little bit of that dream state is still lingering. I find that it can be really productive. You always want to do more, but you can knock out that hour or so in the morning. The things tend to get done eventually. So.
I still find it quite amazing that you do so much and that you can routinely get up early. I bet you stay up late too. I just have a guess about that.
I guess I've never sort of required more than maybe 6 hours sleep. It's sort of,
That's nice.
Once I've had about that, I wake up and my body says, okay, we're done. We've had enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's
never
fortunate.
Been a real trial.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't know what you're working on right now, but I am wondering what at this point in your career gives you the most joy in your writing.
I do a lot of writing for advertising. I write real estate stuff. I write a lot of things for clients. And so I think the things that I do only for myself tend to give me the most joy. That's probably true for a lot of writers. And I think one thing that I know I do anyway is I always make that my last priority. Even though I tell myself, no, this is the really important writing. Make sure that you stick to that as much as you do the client needs this article or something, next week. And so you shove your own stuff out of the way to get that done. But yeah, I would say fiction, creative nonfiction, doing research. I got an MFA in fiction writing, was only or primarily a fiction writer for many years, and then kind of shifted more to nonfiction, creative nonfiction. And now I find they're kind of reaching a blend where the fiction is based on a lot of sort of historical or pop culture research. Somehow that blend works for me in a way that solely fiction or solely nonfiction never quite has.
Mm. That's encouraging. It's like if we write long enough, maybe we'll write ourselves to that state that you're talking about where...
Right.
Yeah. So you say you shove your own writing aside to fulfill your commitments to work, but those early morning hours, are those mostly about your fiction? or/slash nonfiction?
Yeah, I mean, if I can protect them that way. Yeah, sometimes if I'm on a deadline or whatever, and this is the only time I've got to do it, then I will. When I was doing the baseball book, I mean, that I did that, and I did my regular job and pretty much nothing else for about 4 or 5 months. So I kind of got away from a couple of fiction projects. I've since returned to them, never away for that long a period of time.
I'm glad to hear that, because it's sort of like you can, from experience, build some trust that you'll get back to it, that you haven't put it aside for years and years. That's good.
Yeah, I think if you put it aside for too long, then it's harder, because you kind of go into a different space just as a person psychologically, and sometimes getting back to where you were when you were writing it can be difficult.
What's the difference between being the person who's not writing and being the person who does write psychologically?
Well, I wasn't even thinking so much even like write or not write, but just think sometimes when we're writing a piece, it's reflective of kind of what we're thinking about at the time, emotionally, what we're going through at the time. And then if you're away from it for too long, some of those kinds of things change. And so you go back to it and, you're just not in that same kind of, psychic space that you were. I try not to leave anything for too long. And I think it was Annie Dillard said that if you stay away too long, you stop believing in the world that you're creating. Mm. Suddenly you're doubting it, and you're kind of coming at it more with a certain skepticism that once you, when you were really in there and when you're really working on that project, it really becomes part of everything else you do, even when you're not writing.
Right. You know, that's a great answer.
You hear things on the radio, you hear overhear something at the grocery store, and you go, ooh, okay, I could see how that would go in. Everything becomes fodder for it.
Right. So that might be the answer to this question, but here comes my question. What remains the hardest part for you about being a writer? It might be staying in that world that you're creating, but maybe it's something else.
I think it's being able to have enough sustained time to really build momentum on projects. It's important, I think, for a lot of writers, certainly for me, that I'm just back in that world enough that I can enter it more easily. Whereas if I'm a big project comes along and I have to push that more creative piece aside for a month or two, it's sort of harder to get back into it. And then I think the other hard part that I have, and I know some other kind of people who have spent a lot of time as editors, is shutting off that editor. I feel like sometimes my progress isn't as quick as it is maybe for some other writers who don't have that strong editorial background. So they're not constantly challenging themselves. They're not constantly nitpicking things. They can really just let it roar out onto the page.
Right. And then nitpick later. You're also teaching writing. And I think it's just journalism, or focused on journalism, at the University of Cincinnati. Is that right?
Right. And, yeah, magazine writing.
Right. So how does that work for you in terms of your writing life and how maybe teaching influences your own writing?
What I really love about it, I love talking craft. I love reading, because, I'm teaching, basic magazine writing. So we're reading some of the great magazine pieces of all time. Frank Sinatra Has a Cold, Joan Didion, Joseph Mitchell, just a lot of these great writers. Yeah, I love working with the students and just sort of breaking things apart and kind of surprising them that they'll read it one time, maybe, and they'll think, oh, okay, well, that's about Joan Didion and she's saying what was going on at Haight-Ashbury. But then you can really break it down and say, look at all these other subtle themes and how she's bringing this together. So, I really enjoy it a lot. And I like the kids a lot, too. I mean, they bring such enthusiasm and naivete that, a crusty old editor kind of gets a little recharged by them, So it's definitely a two-way street. I get a lot from them. That does, I think, feed my own writing then. Makes me realize, okay, this is why I was writing it. magazine writing isn't just about deadlines and setting up the interview and blah, blah, blah. There's a passion to do it, which is why we do it.
That's great. So I know that you're prepared to read to us from one of your books about writing, and maybe this is a good time to hear from you on that, since we're talking about teaching writing.
Okay. This is the 10th anniversary writer's idea book. I forget when that came out, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. The book originally came out in, I think, 99 or 2000. And essentially what it is really gets into what we're just talking about, sort of the craft of writing, but also blending craft with art and imagination and where ideas come from. And it has, I don't know, maybe 400 or so prompts to kind of get you writing. Having taught, having spoken at a lot of writers' conferences, I was aware that a lot of times writers early in their apprenticeship, you know, are always kind of looking for validation and things. I kind of wrote this passage in the hopes of kind of pushing them beyond that a little bit. So it's just a couple of paragraphs. I can offer no hidden formulas, no secrets in this book. I don't know that any exist. The secret to getting ideas aren't really secrets. Open your mind and heart. Open your eyes and ears. Take risks. Trust your talent and your instincts. Be willing to see your ideas and your life and the world around you in new ways. Be patient. Be positive. Don't be distracted by the opinions of others, real or imagined. Don't worry about getting published. That's a whole new topic and one worth investigating if that's your goal. But it's a needless and potentially harmful distraction when you're writing. Don't worry about getting better or fret about whether you're really any good. Read a lot. Write a lot. Most of all, have fun. Your sense of freedom and play will infuse your writing with energy, and that energy will make your words enjoyable to read. And you'll be having fun, which is an end in itself. You'll be learning about yourself and about others. You'll have a place to nurture yourself and explore your ideas. You'll have a place to investigate things in all their maddening ambiguity, to seek and find your own opinions and truths. You will expand your powers of empathy as well as your understanding of life. In empathy and understanding, we find compassion for others and for ourselves. We grow. With these goals in mind, let's begin.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 Port Townsend. In case you've just joined us, you are listening to In Conversation with Sheila Bender, discussions on writing and the writing life. Today, Sheila is talking with writer Jack Heffron about his work and his longtime position of editor at several publishing houses.
That's a good pep talk. I'm ready. Not going to say goodbye yet, though.
Yeah, I have to give it to myself.
Right, but I love that line, and you'll be having fun, an end in itself.
It has to be that.
But that's not what our teachers taught us, and that's a really big hurdle for a lot of people, and including me. We were taught that writing is something really important, and what's important is that you use a big vocabulary and you know what you want to say before you even said it on paper, before you wrote it, that it's going to be graded, that critic that you're talking about, the editor. So it's very hard, right. I think, to say, oh, I'm writing because I enjoy doing it, because a lot of us did not have an education that allowed us to enjoy writing. There's always so much pressure.
That's absolutely true. I have friends who are graphic designers or painters, and this one woman will spend the weekend in a park doing her watercolors, and she never thinks, is this any good? Is someone going to publish this? Is someone going to buy? Where, yeah, writers, we just have so many of those voices. It's so much harder. It's so much easier to lose that sense of, well, why am I doing it? Well, I think it's really fun. I like doing it.
Right.
You know? 'Cause if it's not that, then nothing else is going to ever be, even if you have a bestseller or whatever, it's never going to be enough if it isn't at that fundamental level, just a fun thing to do, something
right.
You really enjoy.
Even if you're writing about hard topics and sad topics, if there isn't an element of, I am glad to be doing this, you're right. It's just a grind, like schoolwork. So I was going to say, though, that the idea of having to be published in order to be considered really writing is the death of that playfulness, as you say. And I think the lovely voice that you read to us in should stay with all of us who want to write that, yes, we can do this. We can have fun. This is why we do it. However, you've also been an editor. I know from my own experience, having been a person whose books you edited, that the role of an editor is really, really important to the writing world. And as much as we talk about having to shut off our own editor in order to create our books, we then have to involve our own editor and another editor or more in helping us make the books come fully manifest. And I wondered if you might want to address what it feels like to be the person who's doing that for a writer.
I won't say I enjoyed working with every single writer. I mean, some more than others. Certainly, I loved working with you on your books. I always thought of it as challenge, that it's very much a partnership and the goals are mutual. You, both the author and you, as the editor, really want this to be successful, but that it's still the author's book, that the editor is bringing to it maybe a keener sense of knowing the audience that their publishing company reaches and knowing kind of the industry, what else is out there. And so they're bringing that level of expertise to it, particularly with an author who has never written a book before, coaching them through the process. So yeah, kind of, you know, making sure that it's a shared vision and making sure you know what the author's highest goals for this are, and then doing your best to help them reach those goals. But always keeping in mind that it's the author's book. It's not you, the editor's book. So it requires a balance, and you know, certainly took me some years before I was able to really fully achieve it on a pretty consistent basis.
Well, I have to say, you certainly achieved it when we were working on books together, because I would, from the writer's point of view in those situations, think, wow, Jack knows what I'm trying to say and where I haven't said it, which I think was really important advancement for the book. One of the things you did early on in my very first version of a book about writing poetry for Writer's Digest Books, that is such a sacred topic to me. And I had learned from so many esteemed poets that my beginning draft, as I remember it, was full of quotes by them and quotes of their teachers. And I just felt like I was writing from a long line of people that in some ways I felt I had no business being the voice of this. And you wrote me an editorial letter, and part of it said, Sheila, we hired you because we like your voice. Can you do less quoting? And I thought, what a vote of confidence, first of all, that was in me. And it really set my head straight. I mean, it was like, oh, right. My task is to write about it the way I talk about it, informed and influenced by these people, but in my language. So I do think that editors are extremely helpful to writers, and that I always wince when a writer says how their editor doesn't get it. It could be a mismatch between the editor and writer, and maybe it's not the best collaboration. But on the other hand, I think so many editors, and you included, are so skilled at helping the writer focus and see the treasure that's in their work. So I'm glad you reached that balance. I think you reached it before we were working together, which is nice.
It was probably, around that time. And even then, you know, like I said, it wasn't with every author. Yeah, I loved working on your books. But then, there were other authors who maybe even came in with a sense of this is going to be kind of adversarial. Mm-hmm. Oh, don't let the editor push you around. And then I also know editors who kind of approach it with the sense, oh, gosh, these authors, they don't know what they're doing. I've got to turn this sow's ear into a silk purse myself. Yeah. And I guess we kind of come in with some baggage more just in terms of how we've heard these relationships might be. Mm-hmm. But they really don't have to be that way. And I would say the majority of the ones that I had with authors, you know, and there certainly were some where I was like happy to see that one go out the door. In a lot of cases, no, it really became great. And if you want to read a passage to your family and they'll say, you're a genius, my gosh, where did these words come from? And that's what you want from your family or your spouse or a partner of any kind. From that editor, you really want, you're depending on a level of candor as well as nurturance. And it's a hard thing to write a book. And the editor needs to be kind of a psychologist and figure out, okay, what does this author need from me right now?
Well, I want to thank you for hitting the right note with me. But let's look at the editor's desk in a slightly different way. When the manuscripts first come in, what's going on there, and what can writers do to enhance their chances of an editor liking their work?
There, we're really getting into the business of writing. They are accepting or rejecting books based on what they think they can sell in terms of, you know, whatever the publishing company, if they have a niche market or if it's just more general. But yeah, in most cases, particularly in today's publishing world, the target markets are pretty precise. And so they're going to be looking at it pretty much as a commercial product. Is this going to enhance my imprint? Is this going to either make money or, you know, have a certain level of prestige, or is it breaking new ground? And so they're looking at all of those things. So they might be rejecting a novel and that they think this is perfectly acceptable. And in some cases, they may say, you know, this isn't right for us, but you may want to try this publishing company, whatever. But they really are looking at it as, this is going to be part of my list for the season, and is this going to be an enhancement to the list, either financially or whatever? And so, yeah, they're not saying, we don't want your novel means you are a bad writer. It means we don't think we can sell this, or that it's not good for this imprint to publish that book. Editors make mistakes. There are books that I've rejected that somehow just kind of stayed with me, and I thought, geez, you know, I really wish I would have said yes to that book. Mm-hmm. And generally, you're happy if the author writes you later and said, ha-ha, that book you rejected, so-and-so published, you know. Yeah. It'd be like, great, I'm really happy for you.
So I have a question here. Have you ever accepted a book that you knew wasn't ready enough, but you believed in it and you helped make it ready?
Oh, sure. Yes. Yeah, many times. And in some cases, that sort of goes back to, you go back to the author and say, hey, I'm really interested in this story, and I think there's a lot of potential here, but before we would publish it, you would really need to do some pretty significant rewriting. One that I've thinking of was the woman who came to us, and she had written about the 1961 U.S. figure skating team. The entire team was killed in an airplane crash on their way to the World Championships. And it had never really been written about in detail, and she had done amazing research. But structurally, it was completely backward. And she had done great research in terms of what the figure skaters had done. The writer was a figure skater, but we didn't really get to know them very well as people. And so I said, beyond just, it's horrifying, they all got killed in a plane crash, that's more of a magazine article. If you're going to sustain us for a whole book, we need to really get to know who these people are so that we can feel the tragedy that much more deeply. And so as it is, I would have to turn it down. But if you'd be willing to spend some time and really go back and re-interview people and things like that with specific questions, instead of why was this person so good on their event at the North Americans, it was go back and say, you remember, did the person have a particular hobby? Did they have a high-pitched laugh? Any of those kinds of details that you didn't get the first time around. And she did it. It was amazing. And we worked on that book for about a year, and we ended up publishing it. And actually at the, this was, was it 2008? I can't remember. It was actually at the U.S. National Championships. They even sort of brought her out, and, you know, they had her book on the Jumbotron there at the event. It was pretty neat.
Yeah.
It was really something to be part of.
On the other hand, I'm very quickly, because we have short time, what can a writer do to enhance their chances of an editor considering their book?
I think the first thing is making sure you're sending it to the right place. Take the time to study and find out what agents, what kinds of things are they most interested in. Look at other books they've represented, or if you're thinking more of a small press, a university press, you know, go get their catalogs for the last few years. Find out what kinds of things they seem to like. I mean, because they'll all just say, we're looking for high quality literary work. You know, well, that's, we all think that that's what we have.
Right.
But, you know, really go into it. I think that writers can save themselves a lot of time just by taking the time to make sure they're knocking on the right doors.
Right. And that's a whole separate thing than writing, is doing that research. And
right.
Yeah. So bookstores, online information, any other sources you can think of?
Yeah, I would say going to the website of the press that where you're going to pitch your book, and you know, just look at their whole catalog and really, you know, with an eye for what's unique about it. What topics do they seem to be particularly interested in? If you can make yourself a good fit, story idea needs to be right on too. But I just see so many writers just kind of frustrating themselves by just these scattershot. I'll send it to 100 places, and most of those places they're going to get rejected from because the book or book idea or story or whatever isn't really right. And then they feel terrible and they lose confidence because they're being rejected. Take the time, make sure you know you've really targeted the market for what you are writing. And it's still hard,
right,
but it's significantly easier.
Right. And so that's very good advice. Take the time to do that so that you have more success later. So I want to thank you, Jack, for your thoughts and your information and the excerpt that you read. It's going to stay with me a long time. I hope that you'll find that half hour even today to continue writing your fiction / nonfiction, your border crossing prose.
Right. Yeah, whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sheila. It's been great talking to you. I really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life with Sheila Bender. For more of Sheila's interviews, please go to Sheila's website, www.writingitreal.com/audio. In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Announcer is Kurt Vanderslice.